Hey, Kyle Selegi here. Before we get started, I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Kyle Selegi Variety Hour, and I want to warn you that my audio is a little fuzzy throughout the entire episode. It's not too bad. You can still hear what I'm saying, but it's there. It's noticeable. And I just want to apologize and say it'll be fixed for next week. Nothing I can do this week, but I will fix it for next week. And yeah. Sorry about that. Please listen. It's a good podcast. We have some good conversations, but yeah, I'm sorry. Please still enjoy.
Pre-recorded from his basement, it's the Kyle Selegi Variety Hour.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selegi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. I am your host, Kyle Selegi, and today, football is back. Not just today, it's been back for a little bit now, but football is finally back. We are one game deep in the preseason. We waited 8 months for football to come back, if you don't count the AAF, which was a good few weeks there, but NFL football is back. We waited for months, and we were rewarded for our patience with four meaningless quarters of Buffalo Bills football. But they were fun quarters. A lot of fun stuff happened in those four quarters. We had one breakout player in particular, and I may or may not have been talking about him for the last 2 months on this podcast. So we'll talk about him a little more later on in the podcast. And also, we're going to talk about the Premier League a little bit, because that's back. And on top of that, I have the Hofbräu House update. And unfortunately, there's no Buffalo Fight Night this week because there were no fights. Training camp's over. Mm. There's no fights. I told you guys it's the fans' favorite segment, and we even had former Bills Wire contributor Victoria Saley tweet us to say it's the best segment, and it is, but unfortunately it's canceled. Yeah, let's introduce you guys. I'm here with the normal guys, the normal crew. It's Justin DeLauro, and then the other guy who I'll introduce. Dilo, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Kyle?
I'm well. And Rich Kowalski. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm basking in the glory of Tottenham Hotspur winning
their first
match of the season. Fantastic.
Yeah, let's get into the Premier League. I know a lot of people who listen to this probably do not care about the Premier League. Absolutely. They're like, talk about Bills football, the process. But all of our listeners are from South Carolina, so so Premier League's back. The opening weekend opened Thursday with Liverpool versus
Norwich,
and Liverpool won quite handedly. Yes, the Canaries, their return to the Premiership, and they were destroyed. So that was fun. But yep, Premier League's back. I'm a West Ham supporter. West Ham were slaughtered, I'll say, by Man City in that opening match. But Rich, you are the more soccer knowledgeable person, the most on this podcast, I would say, or Premier League. So let us know. Catch us up on the opening weekend and Tottenham. What's going on with Tottenham?
Well, Tottenham, you know, they came into Saturday morning. They played against Aston Villa, a team that was recently promoted back into the Premiership after being in the Championship for, I think it was three seasons. I think in the past they set the record for most consecutive seasons in the Premiership. So they are a classic team. Tottenham went down early, and you know they were applying a lot of pressure, but they ended up coming back second half. Harry Kane, two goals. New signing, record signing for Spurs. Ndombele scored a goal. It was fantastic. Also, Harry Kane's first goals in the new stadium they have. English captain, if you don't know who I'm talking about. But
yes, for sure.
Fantastic match. It's good to see that soccer's back. It's crazy it's how quickly, you know, it's like June they have the Champions League final.
I love it.
Which I don't want to think about, but they, a few months later, they're already back, and there's so many new faces. It's going to be a really interesting season this year.
Yeah, soccer's great, especially if you just want a sport that doesn't stop. It just because, like you said, it ended in June. There's international friendlies to get you through the summer, mm-hmm. and then in early August, regular season's back. So that's great. And it's just, I want to say it's probably the most entertaining sport off the field, just with all the transfers and everything. Mm-hmm. NBA gives it a, or basketball gives it a run for its money, but I would say soccer overall is the more exciting sport off the field. D'Lo, have you been watching any soccer this weekend?
I have not.
Oh, you're a coach.
I know.
You need to get the tactics.
I've been on the field, but I've been on the pitch, but not not in the film room.
You haven't been grinding the film?
I have not.
Oh. So yeah, like I said, West Ham got demolished. And then I just watched the I watched the last 20 minutes or 30 minutes of the Chelsea game because I wanted to watch Christian Pulisic.
Oh yeah.
The American who the 20-year-old American who was just sold to Chelsea for $73 million dollars, I think it was something crazy. Highest paid for an American player ever. So American soccer has needed a superstar for years. They needed somebody who can just dominate, you know, overseas, internationally, who can just get Americans excited about men's soccer. Because we saw over the summer, Americans were crazy about women's soccer, but American soccer has needed a superstar on the international level to just bring national attention to the game. Mm-hmm. And Pulisic didn't do it today, but Rich, he did not do it today. They lost 4-0. But do you think, Pulisic, as somebody who knows more about soccer than I do you think he can be that guy who can kind of be the face of American soccer?
I think he already is the face of American soccer.
That is true.
But
that is true.
In general, though, I don't know. It was kind of crazy for a moment, you know, watching. It's Manchester United. There's, you know, Paul Pogba and Marshall and Rashford and all these big players on Manchester United. And then you have Christian Pulisic from Hershey, Pennsylvania. On the same field, same pitch as them. It kind of was surreal. And then, for Chelsea fans, it hit reality pretty quickly because, it was 1-0 and very quickly after that, 3-0 and then eventually 4-0. And it was just... Pulisic brought really nothing, and he's new.
Yeah,
and Chelsea also had have a 2-window transfer ban, so they can't make any signings. They got that signing in before that, so it was their only signing of the summer. Pretty crazy, but he has the potential to be the face, the long term face of American soccer. You know, being on NBC on the networks every single weekend potentially for Chelsea is a huge draw for Americans, and it'll be interesting to see if he can actually do something in the Premier League.
I hope he does. I'm not 21 years old. I am 21 years old, but I'll be 22 next week. So, but just I don't necessarily need someone to look up to. But it would be cool if Christian Pulisic is that guy who kids, when they're 8 or 9 years old, and they're deciding what sport to go into further, you know, continue playing and developing themselves in, whether it's football, soccer, baseball, basketball, etc. It would be cool if, you know, Christian Pulisic becomes the guy where kids can look up to him and say, hey, you know, I could be him one day. I could play for Chelsea, Manchester United, Dortmund, etc. So it would be cool if Pulisic becomes that guy. But I think that's enough soccer talk. I think we probably lost everybody by now. So before we get into Bills talk, before we give our takeaways from the Bills preseason game against the Colts and, a trade that went down and a few roster moves just in general, I have a Hofbräu update, guys.
Our second favorite topic.
All right. The second favorite segment. The fans' second favorite segment of the show.
Are you going to go there for your birthday next week?
Well, it's not going to be open.
Oh,
that's the update. They haven't officially announced anything, but last week I told you guys about my friend who applied to be a bartender there. Mm-hmm. He works down in that area. He works at Helium Comedy Club. So the other day, he walked up there. He walked to see if anyone was there that he could talk to about getting a job there. And he said there were no lights on, there was nobody there, and it looked like it hasn't been touched in a year. So, it doesn't look like it's going to open, especially not before August 19th, which is my birthday, but just maybe anytime this month or next month. So that's disappointing, guys. But if it's been put off for 5 years, what's another few months, you know?
Yeah. That's like everything in Buffalo, pretty much, you know, Bass Pro.
Bass Pro, dude.
Is this gonna be, you know, another one of the Bass Pros where it's you think it's coming and it never comes?
I, I could be wrong because I was young when the whole Bass Pro saga unfolded. But did they ever start building Bass Pro?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
Just like lives this. In infamy in the minds of Western New Yorkers is what could have been. What all the fishing gear I could have bought.
That is I remember thinking as a kid, just like, because that's what everyone talked about was Bass Pro coming and that's going to revitalize the waterfront. I was just always like, why is a fishing shop going to revitalize the waterfront? What's going to, how's
the opposite actually
it?
In theory?
Yeah, you're right. Yes, in theory, that would kind of destroy it a little more. But, you know, I'll take Canalside over Bass Pro. I think Fair that's enough. That's a good trade-off.
It's a good victory.
They got some good beers there.
I just went to a concert at Canalside last week. I saw the Arkells. Great band.
Arkells. I've heard
Arkells
of them.
Arkells are great. They're very good. They're a Hamilton band. I've seen them five times now? Five times live.
So you're somewhat of a fan, you'd say.
I would consider myself a fan of the Arkells. I'm a frequenter of their
supporter,
shows.
Yeah.
Yes.
Almost
I'm an
borderline groupie.
Part of the Arkells faithful, if you will. That's my favorite thing to describe Bills fans as, is the Buffalo faithful when writing. Arkells put on a great show. Audience doesn't care about my Canalside going experience. But I got pizza logs when drunk. Canalside pizza logs, get them when you're drunk. They're very good. So, but now, before we get into this Bills topic, the Bills topics, I should say, we'll talk about a topic that's akin to the Bills. Somebody who was a Bill for about 40 seconds. On one March night. It's Antonio Brown, who, of course, spurned the Bills in favor of the Oakland Raiders, the former Steelers receiver who was traded to Oakland, and might not play. Might not play for Oakland because of a helmet dispute. Apparently, he has been wearing the same helmet for like 10 years, and then the league outlawed that helmet in the offseason, and now he keeps going to camp trying to wear this helmet. Apparently, he painted this helmet to look like the... not to look exactly like the Raiders helmet, but similar. And then everyone was like, what the hell are you doing? Just wear this helmet, dude. And apparently now he's like, no, I'm going to wear this helmet. And if I can, I'm going to retire. So, that's crazy. That the best receiver in the NFL might retire because he can't wear his poorly painted helmet, which is just... I mean, that's something else to think about. If he's actually been wearing this helmet for 10 years, are we talking like this model of helmet or the same helmet?
I think it's a model.
Okay, well, it'd be a lot more fun if it was the same helmet actually wanted it painted like the Raiders.
Like, he has like notes written inside like a high school locker.
Yes. He wrote down the answers to his math questions
to
on the visor. Yeah. But, so, I'll go to you, Rich. Did the Bills dodge a bullet by this Antonio Brown trade falling through? Or is it just like, no, he's going to play, this helmet thing is going to get figured out, and he's still a very good receiver?
You know, I was in pretty much the majority when Antonio Brown, you know, kind of snubbed the Bills in that trade and saying that the Bills kind of dodged a bullet at that point, that, you know, they don't need that drama and that character in their locker room. And it's really further the actions he's taken in the last few days. It's just insane just hearing and reading about these crazy stories about him trying to sneak his helmet back onto the practice field. It's just absurd. So the Bills definitely, it just further validates the thought that they did, that them and, you know, other teams that were interested, such as the Browns, did dodge a bullet and kind of, you know, don't have to deal with that crazy personality in a locker room. Like what is he going to do next at this point? It's crazy.
It would have been a lot of fun. It would have been a ton.
We would have had a lot to write about. That's for sure. He would have given us a lot of content.
Okay, but like John Gruden talking about it is one thing, but imagine Sean McDermott trying to, because he has a very specific way of explaining things. Imagine him trying to talk about Antonio Brown drama.
You know, Antonio, he might not win everyone over all the time, but you know, he's a good part of our locker room and a leader for these young guys. You just try to spin it.
Yeah, he's a leader.
Like some process terminology
and they can learn
from him.
Exactly. And I didn't even mention that he's dealing with blisters on his feet.
Yeah.
Because he has frostbite because of too much cryotherapy, which is... Mm. He would not have handled Buffalo well.
I've got a bad joke right now.
No, say it. I know where you're going.
Cryothermy a river.
Hey! That's a good one. That's a good one. But, yeah. Antonio Brown, guys. D'Lo, what's your opinion on this crazy situation that's unfolded here?
It's quite insane because you're going from this guy who's easily the best receiver in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's sliding just because he can't get on the field, whether it's through frostbite or this helmet dispute. And it's just utterly ridiculous right now. That's really all it is. I mean, the Bills, it's kind of a weird thing because at first when the Bills almost had him for that brief night,
mm-hmm.
it seemed like, all right, you know, maybe I could twist my brain into making this a good thing. And now there's just no way. I mean, could you imagine him in this camp? It would just be at St. John Fisher. It would just be so ridiculous. Was he gonna? He would have painted his helmet here too. Like, it's just nuts. It's just too nuts. It's compounded by the fact that now it's in Oakland, where it's just a circus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just. I just keep coming back to utterly ridiculous because that's all it is. I mean, it's just, how do you even handle it?
But Peterman.
Peterman to Antonio Brown when David Carr gets pulled.
Yep.
You guys, that's going to happen.
Peterman had a lengthy scramble yesterday.
He took off.
50 yards. Preseason Peterman back again.
He strikes again. Hell of a throw by Peterman.
Hell of a drive.
Hell of a run.
Hell of a run. Hell of a run, Bob Peterman.
I didn't see Tyrod do that in the preseason.
That is true. I haven't seen Allen do that in the preseason either.
He ran for like 8 yards.
Did they keep the right quarterback? I don't know. So, just one more thing on Antonio Brown. You guys know how Sean McDermott describes injuries, right? He doesn't say he has this injury. He'll mm-hmm. describe it as a little bit of a groin or a little bit of an ankle. So with Antonio Brown, would it be like...
Oh my God.
That's a bit much, but like Antonio Brown, I'm gonna cut that out.
You know what? Honestly, it gives me a little bit of this feel that, you know what? Maybe he's lost a step, and he's starting to realize it, and now all of these are just deflectionary tactics mm-hmm. for skill. I don't know. I'm reaching. I'm not doctor.
Oh no,
at all,
you might be right.
I can see that.
But
totally
it's just you know what? I'm 31. You know, last season. But he was still wildly productive last year. It's hard to see a guy over an offseason totally fall off the cliff like that. But, man, or he's just not fitting in. Maybe he's just going to pull an Anquan Boldin and just leave.
Oh, too soon.
Too soon?
That'd be fun.
Still raw. Mean,
maybe he'll do Avante Davis and leave halftime. Who the hell knows?
Wow.
It's not affecting me, so it's fun to watch from afar.
Yes.
All this drama. Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, leave. Go ahead. That's more fun for us.
It really makes you wonder. I haven't watched any of the Hard Knocks yet, but it really makes
me
wonder
neither.
If any of this is on Hard Knocks. Because if it is, HBO might have a huge influx of subscriptions or free trials for 14 days.
Yeah, very true. From what I heard, the first episode kind of sucked. Which is like, you would not expect that from this, like you said, D'Lo, circus in Oakland with mm-hmm. Richie Incognito, Antonio Brown, John Gruden.
Mm-hmm.
You would not expect it to be boring. That's the last thing you would expect it to be. But, mm-hmm. I mean, if Mark Davis and just the organization really does have that much input, like, no, you can't show that, show that. Well, then they're not going to show any of this Antonio Brown stuff. Maybe I'll check it out.
What they need to show is Mark Davis's grand caravan from, like, 1998 that he drives around in. He still has, like, a late 90s caravan that he drives in. I think he had, a TV and VCR installed in it.
Oh,
it's absurd.
Dude, the Raiders are something else. We've talked about them on the show before, but they're just the goldmine.
They really are.
Of talking points. Thank you, Oakland. Or thank you, Las Vegas. Whatever city you play in. That's another thing. Mark Davis doesn't even acknowledge the city. He's just like, Raider Nation has a new home in Las Vegas. It's like it's a touring circus. Now it lives in Las Vegas.
The band of misfits has found a group in Las Vegas called the Cirque du Soleil. They'll be building a stadium and on weeknights they'll have circus performances.
Can
with Richie Incognito as the bully.
I wasn't even doing a Mark Davis voice. I was just doing a weird voice.
Is he from South Carolina too?
Where is Mark Davis? I don't care. I don't care. None of this matters.
Bowl cuts is where he's from.
Very true. That's where you can find him on most days. With John Gruden.
With the bowl.
So I think we should just get into the Bills stuff here because we're 20 minutes
Let's
in.
Let's do
so.
It.
Yeah. So the Bills made a few roster moves. We're recording this on Sunday afternoon, and they may make a few before this goes out on Tuesday. But today they cut Vlad Dukas after a few painful years, and they signed defensive end Sam Acho. Is that who they signed?
Achu.
Yes. Sam Achu. Sam Achu. Very good. Yeah, Vlad Dukas is finally gone. We did our roster prediction a few weeks ago, and I remember saying, like, ideally he's off the roster by the time the roster cutdown is made. And he is. He's off the roster. As you observed, D'Lo, the other day during the preseason game on the Sonoris Perry touchdown run, he was in the end zone like 8 seconds before Sonoris Perry was in there.
I don't know if he touched anybody. He just fell forward and he was like 5 yards deep in the end zone. And
yeah.
Perry still hadn't like taken his ascent into the air when he tried to jump.
And he jumped.
He jumped straight up too, but
yeah. Yeah, he didn't even extend. He's just like, oh, yeah, you can tell he's only had 8 career carries because he does not know how to extend. But with Vlad Dukas, the Bills line has been bad for 2 years. A lot of people say it was only bad last year, but when Eric Woods still played, the line wasn't good. The line wasn't good in 2017. I'm sorry. LeSean McCoy had a lot of yards that year, but just that's when the descent started. And then when Eric Wood left, even though Eric Wood wasn't the player he once was, he still had the know-all. He still had the brain. He still was a functional center as far as that's concerned. But then when he left and Richie left, it just fell off a cliff last year, and we saw the effects of that. But the line wasn't good in 2017, was very bad last year. And Vlad Dukas, even with a bad line, he always stuck out as someone who was bad. He always just like, oh, God, why? Why do you not have anyone better? And they found someone better last year, Wyatt Teller, who wasn't necessarily good, but Vlad Dukas, surprised he was on the roster this long. I'm surprised they didn't cut him after last year, but hey, he's off the roster now, and they got this guy Sam Sneeze, who I think he has like 17 snacks. He has 17 sacks in like 8 years, and he's familiar with Lorenzo Alexander. They played it with each other a few years in Arizona. So that seems like a good trade-off there. So, Rich, any opinions on either Sam Acho or Vlad Dukas?
Vlad Dukas, though, I mean, it was a long time coming just to get rid of him. I mean, he's been the obvious sore spot on the Buffalo offensive line. Like you were saying, even when they were bad, it was still funny just to see kind of at a time he was even worse and more obviously bad. I mean, he's had a long career, so it might just be at this point of his career is just not, you know, it's not in the Bills' best interest to keep him. And getting a, you know, valuable defensive end in return is always great. Getting something that has value rather than just, you know, okay, a draft pick or, you know, something, I don't know. But
no, you're right. D-Lo, any Vlad Dukas thoughts?
The former second-round pick is—it's going to be tough.
Was he a second-round pick?
Second-round pick of the Jets in 2010.
Oh, that makes sense then. Okay.
Jets. it's just with the new influx of bodies on the Bills line, he just doesn't have a spot.
Yes, I agree. He's just—he's not great, and it's like I said, I'm surprised. I remember the Bills, when I was still working for them, they called me back in to help right during the OTAs. That's what they're called. And I was watching the offense, and I saw Vlad Dukas, and I was like, he's still on the roster. Oh, my God. I never even clicked. I thought he was on a 2-year deal, and they just let him go. But, no, he was still there. But he's gone now, which is, I think that shows signs of improvement. When you feel comfortable enough that you can cut a bad player, that shows you've improved, which is, that's good, that's reassuring.
Is that saying much? When you know to cut a bad, when you know to cut a bad player, that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess
it shows good
minds of Bills fans. It is kind of a that's the bar. At sometimes
it shows that you're at least competent. You have competent management when you know to cut bad players. And then also, the Bills made a trade. They traded defensive end Eli Harold to the Philadelphia Eagles for Ryan Bates. Ryan Bates went undrafted out of Penn State, signed with the Eagles at practice on Sunday, played a little bit of left tackle and right tackle. So where they use him, we don't know yet. He's not going to start. He's not even going to challenge for a starting spot. Might not even make the 53. But the Bills need bodies with all the injuries across the offensive line. They're going to need depth players. And it's kind of weird to see the team trade for a player who went undrafted a few months ago. And for the Eagles, I mean, they turned an undrafted lineman into a depth defensive end. But for the Bills, Eli Harold wasn't going to make the team. He just wasn't, especially with Mike Love stepping up in recent weeks in training camp. Daryl Johnson, who we'll get into again, and Eddie Yarborough. We know the Bills coaching staff likes Eddie Yarborough. Yeah, Eli Harold was kind of left in the dust. He wasn't going to make the 53. So for the team to turn Eli Harold into a depth lineman who's young, versatile, and could potentially make the team as just a Swiss Army knife of a player who can kind of be plugged in wherever, kind of fit that Jeremiah Searles role last year, who saw time at tackle and guard and what's his name? Bates? That's what it is. And Bates also has experience at center. So, yeah, really, you can plug him in wherever. And I'm going to say that's a good trade because Harold wasn't making the roster. Bates might not make the roster either, but he has a better shot of making the roster given his position and the need for depth there than Harold did. So, yeah, we don't have to spend time talking about Eli Harold for Ryan Bates just because there's nothing. There's really nothing there. So we'll get into the takeaways from the Bills-Colts preseason game. First Bills game in months, and they won 24-16. The off-season moves paid off because they won their first preseason game. So we can call it a successful off-season right now. And there were a few big moments in the game. Josh Allen looked okay, which I think he was like, what, 6 for 11, 6 for 12? Used check downs a bit. Cole Beasley was useful. And then third quarter, we got the moment. Besides Christian Wade rushing for 65 yards, which Rich will talk about later. But we had Chad Kelly, the 30-yard touchdown run, guys, in front of his hometown. Jimbo was in the crowd cheering on his nephew. So Chad Kelly showed he's got the tools. He can be a good backup in this league because he ran for 30 yards. So, guys, before I go to you for your Chad Kelly opinions, I just want to call myself an idiot because for years, after the 2017 draft, I said Chad Kelly was the most talented quarterback in that draft. He's just an idiot off the field. I can't say that anymore now that Patrick Mahomes has won NFL MVP, but...
Where's the hot take siren?
Yeah, where is it? We haven't had it yet, but...
Any second. Yeah.
But Chad Kelly... He looked okay. Maybe he can. He looked better than Jacoby Brissett, and he looked better than Philip Walker. So, Chad Kelly maybe can sneak his way onto that roster, if not as the backup, because I don't know if they would want to cut Jacoby Brissett. But if they want to carry a third quarterback, Chad Kelly could be the guy there. So, anyone have any Chad Kelly opinions here?
I think he actually could make the team because if think about Andrew Luck's injury. That calf injury, that lingering thing. If they want to have a third guy around, I mean, I don't think Chad Kelly should be on a roster, but I mean, they're desperate and they'll have a guy who would at least know the system for the Colts. I mean, I guess Frank Reich's friendship with Jim Kelly is going to pay off for Chad.
Oh, it already has. It got him a paycheck for at least a few months now. So, Rich, any Chad Kelly thoughts here?
I mean, he played well, but I just don't see him making the roster over Jacoby Brissett. I think they might keep three quarterbacks.
They could keep three, huh?
Well, Philip Walker was not.
But yeah, he'd make it over Philip Walker.
Yeah,
that's the most I'll give him.
Chad Kelly, he looked good in last preseason, and again, there were Broncos fans calling for him to start before he wandered into a random home dressed as a Cowboys. Good old St. Joe's kid, Chad Kelly, walking into houses dressed as a cowboy. Oh, man. Hey, oh, I love the NFL.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Everyone makes mistakes, but if you're you know what? If my friend walked into a house dressed as a cowboy, I'd be like, you know, you're doing something right. I'm not sure what it is, but you got that it factor. So Chad Kelly's got the it factor. Swag Kelly. Swag Kelly going to overtake Andrew Luck.
Oh, no.
Oh, absolutely. It's coming. It's coming. You just wait. So, yeah, let's get into the preseason game. We're a half an hour in. Might as well talk about the headlines. So, guys, I've been saying for months on this podcast, I've been saying for months in articles, and if people listen to this podcast or read my articles, they'll know that I am driving the Daryl Johnson hype train. I've been saying for months he's too valuable of an asset to put on the practice squad. He's going to make the 53-man roster regardless of his preseason, regardless of his training camp, just because he's 6'6", 250 pounds, and extremely athletic. You just cannot expose him for other teams to take when you have him. You're going to put him on the roster just because, I mean, he's a piece of clay, and you can mold him into whatever you want. So, and he showed that in the first preseason game. I was at the Erie County Fair. I was listening to Foghat sing a 10-minute rendition of Slow Ride beautifully.
Oh, gosh.
It's my dad's favorite song. I had to go and watch it with him, so that was fun.
That should be Boomer the outro City. Today.
It was Boomer City. It really was. It was great.
Old ladies dancing everywhere, I'm sure.
Dude, they get into it. It was great. It actually wasn't great.
It's Hot Girl Summer for everyone.
Very true. Very true. Not City Boy Summer for anyone there. They all tend to their farms in Springville. But I'm just isolating the audience
out
here today.
What is going on? Yeah.
Daryl Johnson, guys. My guy, mm-hmm. Daryl Johnson. 3 tackles, 1 sack. And I thank you guys for blowing up my Slack when Daryl Johnson had a sack. Which was just, that was great to see, to look down during Foghat's beautiful rendition of Slow Ride and see that Daryl Johnson had a sack. I was like, my guy, I've been saying for months that Daryl Johnson is good, and he was the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. MEAC Defensive Player of the Year. He had 10 sacks last year on a team that I think won the Division II or Division III National Championship. If they didn't last year, they have in the past. And he was their best defensive player. Of course he's good. Why more people didn't see this before, I don't know. But I've just been conducting this hype train down the rails. That's what trains ride on. But, I've just been conducting this hype train, and this train doesn't stop, to quote my favorite Buffalo sports podcast, guys, Trainwreck Sports. But I made myself laugh there. But and my Twitter feed has been full of people now hopping on the Daryl Johnson hype train. Just these long threads of, oh, here's why Daryl Johnson's going to make the team. It's like, I've been saying this for months. And my other guy, Lafayette Pitts, played well. But Daryl Johnson's my main takeaway.
Pitts had a big play in the end zone.
He did.
Yeah, but he was the one that kind of popped that ball out in the back corner when it looked like Indianapolis was going to find their way in the end zone.
Not when Pitts is on the field. Absolutely not.
I think we found our number two.
We did. Again, I've been saying that for years. But, Rich, what were you going to say about my guy, Daryl?
I think it's time we start a Daryl Johnson fan club, you know, and start a Twitter for it. I think we could really get some people on board.
Oh, absolutely.
On board the train.
But, this train never stops. It has been fun just to see on my Twitter feed so many people just giving Daryl Johnson love, saying this guy's making the 53. They're going to carry 5 defensive ends, and Daryl Johnson may be a lock. And again, I've been saying that for months, so
I gotta be
nothing
giving you
new
credit
to me.
Now.
Who gets bounced from the roster?
Well, Eli Harold's gone.
Thank you.
I think the five are going to be... Oh, wait.
Because this is who you have. You have Murphy and Hughes, Shaq Lawson, Love, Yarbrough, and Johnson. So if you're saying five, one's gotta go. Who goes?
Yarbrough. Wait, what is there? It's Shaq Trent,
Jerry Hughes, then, Mike Love on the other side.
Okay, yes.
Eddie Yarborough. Right.
And, yeah, then Daryl.
And Daryl, so.
Yes, Daryl makes it over Yarborough.
Okay.
Absolutely. Woo. Now, as we've said on past podcasts.
That's a hot take, Siren. No, yeah, I'm just joking.
As we've said, Eddie Yarborough's riding off of one good training camp.
Yeah.
Sure, he's fine. But when you have a player who's 6'6" and just has that first step and is that strength and that quickness, when you have a player in Daryl Johnson who, seriously, I don't want to say he's going to be a pro bowler, but he's going to be a 4 or 5 sack guy. I truly think, if not this year, he will develop into a 4 or 5 sack guy per year if you develop him right, which this coaching staff can do. You look at guys like Levi Wallace, Corey Thompson, Matt Milano, these defenders who this coaching staff, Taron Johnson, just these kind of unknown defenders who this coaching staff just nurtures and puts in positions to succeed. And with Daryl Johnson's talent and mold, he's going to be good. As I've been saying, as everyone else is saying now, and that's my main takeaway from the from preseason game one, I guess, is just he showed talent in the first game. And I don't see how you can cut him. Given his talent, his athleticism, and potential, there's no way you put him on the practice squad.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
Exactly. Anyone else have any Daryl comments?
No, you said it all. I'm with you.
Thanks, guys.
Perfect.
Thank you. It was lonely on the Daryl Johnson hype train. I think I had convinced you guys to hop on, or at least have a foot on with the podcast. But now... now it's getting a little overcrowded. You know, yeah. I can barely move up here, but I'm conducting it, so I gotta stay on here. But
it's your job.
Exactly. I'm a not paid contributor. So where are we going now? We're going to D'Lo on the offense. D'Lo, your main takeaway was the offense. What was your takeaway, my guy?
I mean, I think the offense is starting to trend in the right direction, but, you know, the folks who are getting all excited about, you know, Josh Allen finding Cole Beasley, that's nice, but it's still definitely a work in progress. Allen had some nice throws. He had a couple throws that were a little off the mark. Nothing crazy off the mark. Like last year when you watched him and you could see, you had this feeling that he was overmatched. But some of the passes could have been a little more accurate. You know, obviously we don't know if it was a route, you know, receiver running too deep or not exactly running the right route. So we know some of those things still need to be ironed out. I think TJ Yeldon may, you know, if he doesn't come with a really strong game this week, he might be playing himself off the roster.
Yeah.
You know, that fumble was just huge, huge time. And we know that's like McDermott's one major, you know, it's a major sin to McDermott turning over the ball. And after he fumbled it, you saw, you know, Sonoris Perry and Marcus Murphy get way more touches, and I don't even think Yeldon was on the field after that. And with, you know, Devin Singletary looking good, and then, you know, it looks like, okay, so let's say it's McCoy, Gore, and Singletary as your top three. Do you really need Yeldon as your fourth? Or do you get crazy and take somebody like Isaiah McKenzie and let him be that kind of wide receiver slash gadget, you know, wide receiver slash running back gadget guy, and that's almost your fourth running back? So,
don't forget Patrick DeMarco, too.
Yeah, they're going to carry a lot of running backs.
Yeah, that's another one, too, yeah.
Those fullbacks.
Pesky fullbacks.
But, like, on the day, they you know, they looked to Zay Jones a little bit. Jones was 2 of 5 in receptions on the day, and then the poor guy almost got decapitated at the end zone. So that was unfortunate. You know, hopefully he'll work his way back and it'll be, you know, they'll keep looking to him a lot. The one thing I thought was interesting is that Robert Foster, we didn't see a lot of him until later in the game.
Yep.
So I don't know if that's anything, you know, detrimental right now, but it's interesting that John Brown, Zay Jones, Cole Beasley, Andre Roberts were seeing quite a bit of time. So I don't know if, you know, Robert Foster is going to be fighting for snaps right now, but it just seems like wide receiver spot, there's still, they're really still working, you know, toward getting that stronger connection with Allen right now. I feel like right now you're going to have, you know, Brown, Foster, Beasley Jones, Andre Roberts, and then, you know, Ray McLeod and, you know, McKenzie kind of figuring out that last spot after that. I mean, Cam Phillips and Victor Bolden had little moments Thursday night, but I just don't see them jumping over anybody to make the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still more it's tough too, because right now the first team played two series.
Yeah.
So to really sit there and say, you know, it does feel like it's trending in the right direction. Dable definitely put an emphasis on putting the ball in the air, and you could see 6 of 11, and there were still some things that need to be ironed out. So if that's what they're going to use the preseason for, I'm all for that. Definitely let Allen throw the ball. I know they're going to want to be conservative to a degree and not, you know, overly expose their playbook, but, you know, things need to get a little better before September comes around, or else we're going to be talking the same way that we did last year, hoping that Josh Allen can just make plays from broken moments.
Yeah, I agree. It would be rash to judge the offense based off of, like you said, two series, but
it's got to be better.
Yeah,
two series has got to be better.
Yeah, I don't want to say displeased with Josh Allen's performance, but he didn't look great. I was happy to see him use his checkdowns. He was just, you know, getting it off when he needed to. Cole Beasley in this game, we've heard it through training camp that he was using Cole Beasley as his checkdown guy, and we saw in this game, the two series that they were out there, that Cole Beasley is that guy. He's going to be there when Josh Allen just needs to get rid of the ball. But there were also a few plays where Josh Allen looked like the Josh Allen of old. There was specifically a play where it was a long ball to Zay Jones, and it kind of looked like a throw he would have made in week 2 of last year. I think it was just way off the mark, way overthrew him. But then he also had a few decent throws, like the throw that Zay Jones almost got decapitated on. That was not a bad throw. Sure, it was into the sun, as we talked about in the Slack, Rich. Just why this team has so many issues having receivers run routes into the sun.
Oh,
it's
man.
Kind of odd, but you know, Zay Jones, that was not a bad ball. So I was, again, not displeased with what I saw from Allen, but I wasn't jumping for joy either.
No, it was adequate. That's how I describe it. And more, we need to see more good and fewer of the poor throws over the next month before we start to feel like this is going to be really, really successful.
Yeah. Anything else from the offense here, besides from what we saw from the first team unit?
I mean, I thought Devin Singletary looked good.
Mm-hmm.
I liked McKenzie. I thought he definitely was able to kind of show that gadget receiver, you know, his quickness, his ability to get open. I thought that was good. Marcus Murphy had a nice little night, 5 carries, 33 yards. Nothing too crazy. There was, I mean, truthfully, and I won't steal anybody's, you know, outside the Wade Thunder, but I didn't see anybody that I was like, this guy is definitely stamping his name on the 53-man roster right now. So that was a little disconcerting, because usually there's at least one player you're like, this guy, we got to start, you know, finding a spot for him. And right now it's just, we're not there yet. I know it's only one game, it's 4 quarters, but, you know, you're hoping to see at least somebody, whether it was from the tight end group or, you know, even on the offensive line, somebody on the depth of the offensive line to step up and really show some strength, and it just didn't seem like it happened.
Rich, any takeaways from the offense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the offense in general, is just, it's still a work in progress, and they're installing new plays and lots of new people and pieces. But one thing I loved seeing, though, was that Christian Wade touchdown run. Was it 65
yards? This is your takeaway.
Yeah, it absolutely is. He did fantastic. I mean, it's his first ever NFL game, first ever NFL touch, anything in the game, and he scores a 65-yard touchdown, which is just absurd, you know. And he's a very talented runner, and he looked a little funny taking the handoff. You know, he was kind of like didn't know what to do when he scored a little bit, made a joke about that after the game. He's like, I don't even know what the score was. It's just, it's great to see that the Bills are just kind of going anywhere for the talent that they want to get. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they haven't played the sport, they're going to go out and get it, which is promising to to fans to see them take that initiative and take somewhat unique approaches to adding talent to the roster. And I mean, Wade, who knows if he's going to make the roster, but he's certainly making a case of getting more touches and getting more opportunities. I'd love to see him in the punt game more or the return game. He has that ability to keep his head up and know where he's going and find creases that other backs or other runners can't see. And with, you know, that experience in rugby and seeing it, you saw it easily on the first play. He might have been untouched, but a lot of that, it was blocking and as well as his vision to find those creases and those spaces to slip through. I mean, I've said it before. I remember, he's kind of like a mix of like, he has that, those shifty Fred Jackson hips that you remember on like screen passes where it's like, you don't know where he's going. He doesn't look like he's going super fast, but he is shifty and he's quick with his moves. But it was fantastic to see that. And it's also like, okay, you have a game where TJ Yeldon kind of takes a step back and drops the rock a bit and doesn't really make a chance at, you know, making the roster. I don't think at this point, unless he has a spectacular second and third game, if he's still on the team. But you have someone else stepping up like Christian Wade, where, you know, it makes it maybe a little more difficult of a decision for the Bills to, okay, do they keep Snorris Perry with the experience, or do they add someone with a little more electricity running the ball than Perry? So they've got a good, you know, problem on their hands figuring out the running backs. But the second and third preseason game are really you're gonna start to see more of a picture of what the overall team is gonna look like and how they're going to be running their offense. You know, first preseason game is just kind of such a very loose, you know, team play calling and everything. There's so many things new. They're trying all different things. In these next few games, though, it's going to be great to see what comes together and if anything, you know, develops more and makes fans a little more excited for the season.
Yeah, I would love nothing more than for Christian Wade to make the 53-man roster, but I don't think it's going to happen right now, unless, like you said, he's going to get more opportunities in the coming games. And if he breaks off a few more 65-yard touchdown runs, they'd be foolish to keep him off the roster. But I remember after the Bills were allocated Christian Wade back in January, watching his rugby highlights, and there's a lot of them. He is just a tremendous athlete. That was my takeaway, was just, he's strong, he's fast, he is just, he's something else. On the rugby pitch, he was, again, that's why he was an English rugby superstar, is he was just incredible. He could find the hole, outrun anyone, and just, rugby, completely different game than football, but when you're a good athlete, you can really, in a game that's as similar to football as rugby is, when you are a superstar at that, odds are you're going to be pretty good at football. I remember thinking, I don't know how it's going to translate, but although it's only one touch, it looks like he's translating. He got the carry, found the hole, and just went up it. Again, it was against fourth string defensive ends or defensive linemen, but he found the hole and he just outran everybody. So you can't deny his talent, and you can't deny that he's fast, deceivingly strong, and again, even though his football IQ might not be there, if you just get the ball in his hands and say, here, take it through the hole, and just run, outrun everyone, that's kind of all you need to do. That's kind of all you need to ask out of your fourth string running back, he would be, behind McCoy, Gore, and Singletary. So just as a kind of a gadget player, like we've been saying the whole podcast, just a secret weapon. You just put him out there. If you want to throw him the ball or just even hand him the ball, he'll take
it. Kick him the ball.
Kick him the ball. But yeah, put him out as a returner. Or just pretend he's playing rugby. Just lateral him the ball.
Do a drop kick, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just get fun with it. Brian Daboll, be creative. But yeah, with Christian Wade, he showed promise in that game. And I think that if he does show a little prowess as a pass catcher, and I don't know if they're going to have him running routes, I don't know if they're going to trust him even in the preseason to go out, run routes, catch the ball. I think if he does show a little promise as a pass catcher, you keep him over Yeldon. Yeldon's younger, but I think Wade's the better athlete, and he's faster again, probably stronger than Yeldon, to be honest. But just with Wade, if he shows that he is capable of breaking off the big play, or he already showed that he is capable of that, but if he's capable of doing that consistently, of breaking off the big play no matter how you get him the ball, it's going to be hard to keep him off the roster.
I like totally.
Thanks. Anything to add on Christian Wade, guys?
I still think this year is going to be his like redshirt year. I mean, he can't go anywhere, right? He's allocated to the Bills.
To the practice squad, yeah.
Practice squad. So like,
he would be to the practice squad.
I mean, you give him a year on the practice squad, I think, you know, he can learn all the elements of the NFL game. And then next year, you know, maybe we give him a go. I mean, Andre Roberts is on a one-year deal, right?
He's on a two-year deal.
He's on a two-year. Strike that. I was like, oh, this guy can return kicks in 2 years. Strike that. But nevertheless, I think they could find a spot for him in a year from now. I mean, he's got to learn how to pick up blocks. He's got to learn how to come out of the backfield and catch the ball. There's so much. And, you know, the guy's probably going to learn so much and make so much progress. And still, you know, he'll need so much extra time.
But that's why I bring up Yeldon, because Yeldon right now is the fourth running back and the sixth wideout, or the seventh wideout. Just, I don't know if he's going to be picking up blocks. You're going to put Yeldon out there as a pass catcher out of the backfield, or just somebody you can hand it off to, right? You're not going to use him very much. So with Christian Wade, I think he's already shown that he can take the ball out of the backfield and break off a big play. Granted, it was once, but with his rugby past, he was very efficient taking the ball to the, what is it called in rugby? The try zone?
Yes, the end. I don't know.
Whatever. To the end. To the house. He was capable of taking the ball to the house in rugby. So he showed that he can do it in the NFL or in American football. So if he's able to do that more and he's able to, you know, catch the ball out of the backfield, if you were going to keep Yeldon, and Wade shows that he's more efficient than Yeldon in what would be Yeldon's role, maybe you do keep him on the 53. Anyone.
I'm just looking at the Bills roster now and just trying to figure out like how we would get to 53. And it's, I mean, maybe. I still think it's a long way for Wade. It's just this team with so many running backs, it's like a weird land that they're in right now.
Yeah, on our 53, I had McCoy, Gore, Singletary, Yeldon, DeMarco. Okay. So I had Wade, I think we had Wade cut, we had Perry cut. I think they do keep Perry, just because he's a special teamer. So that might be the five, but if Wade continues to show that he's more useful than Yeldon, and if they think, okay, we've got enough special teamers, and Wade offers more on offense than Perry does, and we want another weapon on offense, that's Wade's path to the roster right there. So we're going to get to 56 minutes again, but I don't care. We're going to do it. I have stuff to cut out of this. So I want to touch on Tyree Jackson here, the former Buffalo Bulls quarterback who played the second half. I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. We've been saying that for months on this podcast. And he went 2-for-10 in the game, 45 yards. So anyone have any takeaways from Tyree?
He's definitely a project. And I just don't see how the Bills would keep him on, you know, at the end of August when it comes down to the 31st. There's probably no way he's making the roster. If he does, that there'd be an injury of some sort. I mean, and even in that instance, I'd say they'd probably go to a veteran hand over Jackson. But could be a good practice squad addition, though. Get him to develop a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Just the scout team quarterback, if you will, if you don't want Barkley there. But I saw fans saying that, it's the receiver's fault because they just can't handle the speed of his passes. It's like, how many quarterbacks are you going to use that excuse for?
Yeah.
Come on. Sometimes you just have to say, hey,
it's
the quarterback's
it's
problem.
Good. It's
yeah,
right
throw
now,
with touch. Josh had to learn to do it. Throw with touch, Tyree. But right now I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. Like you said, Rich, practice squad maybe. But again, maybe – I don't know. He doesn't look like an NFL quarterback right now, and that's my main takeaway from probably my main takeaway from the quarterback room. Even with Josh just looking okay, Matt Barkley looked good, which is, you know, that's reassuring that if something does happen to Allen, Barkley's going to come in and be effective at least. But then, yeah, Tyree does not look like he should be on an NFL field in the regular season. So if you guys don't have any other takeaways from this just great preseason matchup, then I think we can wrap it up here. Anyone have anything else?
Are you ready for the combined practices this week?
Those will be fun.
You'd think we'd have the return of the fight night after these combined.
Oh, we will have return of. Oh my, I can't wait. But what would it be? It wouldn't be called Buffalo Fight Night. It would be called Spartanburg? Is that where they're practicing? Is that even a city?
I think that is the city.
Did you just make believe so?
Well, no, after some research, Spartanburg, South Carolina. It is a city in South Carolina. It might not be the city, but it is a city in South Carolina. And that's a better... Spartanburg Fight Night is better than Buffalo Fight Night.
Yeah.
So we might just take that title anyway moving forward. we'll have more podcasts on the joint practices next week, I'm sure. Matt and Jeremy will do something. If you want a more in-depth review of the Bills preseason game, make sure to listen to Matt's podcast that he just put out, the recap in which he went through all the stats, the drives, etc. Make sure you give that a listen if you want to. Make sure to read the Bills Wire articles on the website, billswire.usatoday.com, or just billswire.com. They go to the same place. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on Twitter at the Bills Wire, on Facebook at Bills Wire, on Instagram at the Bills Wire. Make sure to follow D'Lo on Twitter. D'Lo, what is it?
At Jay DeLauro.
Nice. And Rich, what's your Twitter?
By Rich Kowalski.
By Rich Kowalski. We're heading out. Ha ha. You can follow me. Guys, when we're 57 minutes deep in a podcast, you just lose your mind, or I do at least. So, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Selege. Do all the things I just said to do, please. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.